Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Gary Stewart of Conscious Connection, and I'm excited to speak to you today. We have a fantastic author, Peter Bedard, who's a well-known healer.
I gotta go.
A well-known healer, and he's had his own near-death experience, and he's written a book about it in his healing practice called Convergence Healing. It's compelling stories and case studies, and it offers a whole new body-mind paradigm for those interested in living a balanced and well-integrated life. And I'm thrilled to speak to him tonight. And he does hypnotherapy and alternative health, and it's just fantastic that Simon & Schuster has picked him up, and it's a wonderful book, and let me get him on the line right now here. And Peter, are you there? There seems to be a technical difficulty here. Let's see what's going on here. His book is called Convergence Healing. Here he is. Anyway, hello, Peter, are you there? Hello, Peter, are you there? Hello, Peter. Hello, Peter, are you there? I'm not hearing you. We're having a little technical difficulty, and I'm not sure why it's not coming through. Hello, Peter. Are you there? Hello, Peter. I'm not sure why he's not responding. There we go. Let me see. Let me see if he's there here. Peter, are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
There you are. Oh, my God. Okay,
there we go. Hey, that was fun.
Blog Talk issued an alert here about Skype. They're having trouble with Skype or something right now. I'm not sure if you were using Skype, but my apologies. They just posted it up when you called in on it. It posted a blue thing that says Skype not available at this time. So use phone.
Oh, I wasn't actually calling through Skype, but I was just talking to somebody in Peru about my teaching over there in Skype. So maybe the lines got
somehow
weirdly crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we have you live now. So I've been talking a couple minutes or so about your book on Convergence.
Thank you. I'm
healing.
So sorry for the delay.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry about it. It'll be fine. There'll just be a little blip in between. But so I understand. Your private practice is helping others to alleviate pain. And what do you find is the most common trait for most people in pain have?
Well, under most pain, there is normally a trauma, especially if it's chronic pain. And, you know, acute pain can be a little bit different because it's something that may just happen. You know, you break something or you get in an accident or something falls on you. That's a little different. The pain I'm talking about is when it's chronic. It may have come from an acute condition. But the pain could be emotional, physical, or spiritual. And there's often a emotional layer underneath those pains that are trauma-related. And those traumas become generalized. We have a difficult time handling them, and they become these generalized sort of anxieties. And we shove them down, and they come out sideways as addictions and anxiety itself and obsessive-compulsive disorders and, unfortunately, quite often as tumors and stuff like that.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, and I do healing work too, and I know that to be true 100%.
I know.
And
I don't know if you remember, I've gone to a couple of your workshops when you did some here in Highland Park several years ago.
Yes, excellent. Yeah, I'm still kicking in Santa Monica doing it now and all over. I just did one in Westlake this afternoon, so I've had a busy day.
Yeah, you have Santa Barbara coming up, right?
Yes, absolutely. So I understand that your process is non-invasive. So what do you mean by non-invasive in convergence healing, how you apply it to your clients who are suffering from chronic pain?
Sure, sure. So convergence healing is a – we'll start with that. Convergence healing is a process that I created from my own pain. So I spent, you know, 20-plus years in chronic pain. I was killed when I was 17 years old and did the whole watch my – I stepped out of my body right before I died, watched the whole process, went to the other side, came back, and my body was just destroyed. I had shattered my left knee in little tiny bits, and I split my right wrist open. I lost all the nerves in my right hand. I had undiagnosed brain damage. I cracked 5 vertebrae, and that was the beginning of it all. I had to learn how to walk again, and I developed fibromyalgia and arthritis and asthma and sciatica, severe sciatica. I had anxiety and depression, and my hemoglobin was splitting. It just kept going on and on and on. And so all that the doctors were able to do was put me back together, which was phenomenal. I'm extremely grateful for that. But after that, they weren't able to do much else. And they just kept offering me other possible surgeries and, you know, drugs. And I didn't want those surgeries, especially surgeries that were possibly going to help. I didn't like that word. Well, it may help. And I certainly wasn't interested in just putting a Band-Aid on it with a pharmaceutical. So I just suffered. I was in pain for years. And eventually I started exploring holistic therapies and alternative and integrative medicine. And I found myself healing. I started to combine all these therapies. I started calling it my holistic cocktail, where I was combining different therapies, and I was doing the therapies based on the idea of treating the person, the self, myself, on the physical level with the body, on the spirit level, on the heart, and on the mind and the thought. So I started picking different types of therapeutic modalities that I was drawn to or that were recommended to me and doing them in conjunction with each other. Like I would do work similar to what you would do on, I love your constellation work, and I would do that for the mind work. And then I would see maybe some body people and do some sort of deep tissue cranial, myofascial cranial sacral work or something like that. And then I would do some powerful prayer and meditation work. And I found that when I combined those things, I healed very quickly and very rapidly. And so I started to do work in that way, as well as combine a way of talking to the parts of me that were in pain and asking the parts of me that were in pain what they specifically needed in order to feel better. And said, you know, and you're very familiar with this, I know through your work, where the idea is instead of, you know, taking the pain and telling the pain what it needs in order to heal, actually asking it, you know, it's like, think of it this way. It's like, and I'm sure you get this, but for the listeners, for those of us who have been maybe the bad boy or bad girl of the world, you know, when we make a mistake and we get caught with something or we're in trouble, everybody's always telling us what we have to do. And they're pointing the finger at us, and they're telling us how to fix this or that, whether it's our friend or family members or back in the day when it was our teachers or principal. And nobody bothers to ask the person that's messing up, whether it was you or the rebel kid or somebody else, nobody bothers to ask them what they need in order to heal. And so I started actually developing a way to communicate with that part of myself that was hurting, whether it was my knee or my back or my anxiety or whatever it was, an addiction issue or whatever it was. And I started talking to these parts and asking them to tell me what they needed in order to heal and how they would like to go about that healing. So when I combine those two philosophies of actually treating the dis-ease on all levels at the same time, and then as well asking the part that hurts what it needs, I found that I started to really, really heal. And I brought that into my own practice with my clients, and I've been doing that now for about 12 years.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. I want to back up a minute. You mentioned something that's pretty incredible about dying from this accident or whatever for a little bit. Do you want to talk to us about the spiritual aspects of remembering that and what it was like
sure.
for you to get guided messages from that other, so that eternal timeline that we're all connected to, but you had...
Absolutely.
Yes, please
so
tell
I
us.
Still get a lot of messages.
Mm-hmm.
So I still get a lot of messages. I still do a lot of that work. A lot of my work is very intuitive when I'm working with people, and I still get a lot of that type of things happening in my life. But in the moment when I was killed, somebody drove me into the back of a semi-truck. I was on a motobikane, which was kind of like a fast bicycle. So it was a cross between like an early moped, like a bike and a motorcycle, but it was very small and compact. And somebody came up behind me, and they pushed my back tire into a semi-truck, and I slammed it in the semi-truck, and I jumped out of my body right before the impact. I watched my body hit the truck and bounce out into the street, and I was very curious about the whole thing. The person that hit me just drove away. There's no police report. There was no ambulance report. There was no documentation of it. But somehow somebody found me in the street, and I floated above the whole accident scene, and I was very at peace. It was a wonderful experience. For people who are afraid of death, I like to really let them know that death is one of the most beautiful things in the world. It is one of the most happy, joyous, amazing, blissful, incredible experiences. And I'm joking when I say this, but very serious at the same time.
Yeah.
That death is something to look forward to. Death is something to embrace and just be excited about and look forward to it. It's a beautiful, beautiful process. And so if you can, live your life looking forward to that moment of death and transitioning. It's a place of joy.
Well,
so I watched my body. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Go ahead. I'm intrigued.
So I watched my body for a little while, and I was very aware that I was not in it anymore. I was very aware that I was dead. I was very aware that who I was prior to that didn't exist anymore. I was a dancer and a performer, and I was very aware that that career pretty much was over, although when I came back, I did try to pursue it a bit. But my ability to dance had been ended in that moment in time. And so the next thing I knew, I was going down a tunnel, and the tunnel was kind of spinning clockwise at the same time as I was shooting through it. And then I was on the other side. And the other side was brilliant. The colors are absolutely incredible. And I'm still even realizing stuff. I still get flashes of moments and experiences and from back then. But there, I was in this space that was can only be described as nothing and everything all at the same time. There was no floor and no ceiling, but I had a sense that I was contained, that I was in something.
Right.
And I was very curious, and I felt just so joyful and so at peace. And I was curious about there not being anybody there. I was just by myself in this place, and it wasn't a worry. It was just a curiosity, because I thought that when you died, you were supposed to be greeted by your ancestors, you know, your dead dog, your grandmother, your relatives that have passed. And nobody was there. I was very curious, just wandering around. And it felt like I was there for quite some time when someone showed up. And my heart just felt like it was being ripped open in this absolute love for this person that was suddenly standing in front of me, who I had no idea who they were. So my consciousness was observing, and my consciousness was seeing there's this man standing in front of me that I'm absolutely in love with. But I did not have a clue consciously who he was. And I was curious even more because he was Asian, and he looked like a commercialized version of Lao Tzu, you know, the old wise man. He had a Fu Manchu, and he had a tweed suit on that was circa 1880, like British Hong Kong. And he looked at me in this very concerned, kind of confused way, and he was translucent. Although he had shape and form, it was as if he was made of light. And he said to me, "You're not supposed to be here." And I just looked at him, and I think I said some sort of smart-ass comment, like, "Well, I am," or something like that.
Right.
And he told me with that I had to leave. I wasn't supposed to be there. I had to go back. And in that moment, I felt incredibly angry. In that moment, all of that pain, all of that hurt, all of my childhood angst, all of that pain literally just came right back into my body. I was furious. I felt like I was getting kicked out of heaven. And the next thing I knew, I was floating back above the accident scene. Mm-hmm. And I was back on this side of the world.
Amazing, amazing.
Yeah.
Wow, that's beautiful. It's very inspiring. And so you've healed yourself of so many things, and a lot of Western doctors tell us they can't cure it. So could you tell us more about that? Because I know a lot of people have given up on Western medicine.
Sure.
When I meet people, they just feel it's not serving them, and there's so many other dimensions that need to be addressed. So can you tell us more about
that?
I think listeners will love that.
Sure. And, you know, it goes both ways. Oftentimes, people sort of abandon their doctors or their allopathic world because they're just frustrated. They feel like they're not making any progress. And I've often had quite a few people who've come to me who've been told by their doctors to not come back because there's nothing that they can do for them.
Wow.
So it kind of runs both ways. Either way, they're feeling very helpless and alone.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know what to do. And my case was, you know, again, they were able to put my leg back together. But when it came to my chronic pain and all of my other issues, they really didn't know what to do, but potentially manage it, you know, just sort of pain management type of things and then potential surgeries. And so, you know, I cured myself of asthma and I cured myself of arthritis and I cured myself of all these different things that I had been debilitating. And, you know, technically you're not able to do that. I even had a hernia that the doctors were insisting that I had to have surgery on. And I unknowingly did a very, very deep tissue form of massage. I just started digging into it. I had understood that a hernia was an opening in the muscular walls.
Right.
And that was scarred and had sort of stayed open so that your intestines or whatever organ would come through there. And I figured, well, why don't I see if I can break down that scar tissue?
Right.
And so I did. And I dug into it. It was very, very painful. And I'm not recommending anybody do this on their own without proper guidance. But for about 5-6 months, I just regularly, almost every day, dug into that herniated area and deeply, deeply, lovingly massaged it. At the same time, I was sending thoughts to that part of me that were of love. And I was actually thinking about what it would be like to be healed. And so I was involving, again, all levels of myself. I was involving my thinking patterns. I was involving my emotional self with the love and the spirit. And I was physically manipulating that part of my body. And the scar tissue broke down and the hernia healed. And I never have had to have that surgery. And that's at least 6 years ago now that I had done that. So there's lots of things that people can do. And my process is really about connecting with that part that hurts and directly building a relationship with it. Most of us have a lot of anger and frustration with the parts of us that are in pain. And we beat up these traumas even more. We make them wrong and bad, and we punish them, or we're embarrassed of them. We tell them we want them to go away, and we want to cut them out, and we're ashamed of them, all that type of stuff. Whether it's, you know, whether it's a weight issue and it's fat, or whether it's an anxiety issue, or whether it's something else, a tumor, we beat it up. And that's not a very healthy relationship.
Right,
so the first thing I do with my clients is reestablish a loving relationship with this part of the body that's in pain. And we even name it and ask it to take on a form, a shape of some sort. It could be a person, place, or thing. It could be a younger version of themselves, as long as it's no one who is currently alive. So it has to be something either from your past or a feeling, an emotion, a dark cloud. It could be a spider. I've had these pains show up as goats and big mountains and dark clouds. So all kinds of stuff.
Wonderful.
And then we ask that part what it needs to heal. You know, one of my favorite poets is Rumi. And Rumi says, the cure for the pain is in the pain.
Absolutely.
And yeah, isn't it? And so instead of running away from it, it means that you have to stop and listen to it and be with it and connect with it, which is, again, when I discovered your work, you know, a few years back. I had been doing my work for probably 6-7 years before I actually met you. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. You know, we're on the same page. It's such a powerful experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to connect with these parts and to let them speak to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what you mean by befriend your pain, because pain is actually a messenger for us that we need to change something, even if it's just our conscious awareness about it. So, and I think so many people are into rejecting it and not seeing what the message is inside that they kind of miss the point. And that's why no matter how long you dull it or drug it, it's never going to go away until, because it's really concealed consciousness. And I love how you're open to deciphering that message. So it can be love. Actually, love heals all things. And when you love pain, it may sound bizarre, but when you love pain and see the message, it does, it no longer has to be there because it's been transformed.
Absolutely. And you must do both parts of that. It's not just loving it. You have to then work with it.
Yes.
And in working with it, you have to then listen to what it's trying to teach you.
Absolutely.
Pain is the biggest teacher in the world. And when we sit and listen and we allow ourselves to learn the lesson, then the pain can go. The pain is no longer needed. Its job is done. And we can actually say thank you to it. Like, I'm so happy that I was killed. It was one of the best experiences of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, as I've gone back to it, because it has taught me so much. And if it wasn't for that moment of my death, I wouldn't be where I am right now with a best-selling book. And like I said at the beginning of the conversation, being able to go to Peru and have these conversations with you and all that type of stuff.
Absolutely.
So,
now, one thing I want to make sure we cover before we have about 8 minutes left here. So addiction and anxiety are a big part of your work. So that's something that needs innovation. And so many people relapse and just have all these negative things. What is your take on that, and how do you treat that, and do you get better results than some of the common things that people
I do. You know, addiction in AA only has about a 6-8% recovery rate.
Right.
And when people do gain sobriety, there's this constant threat that seems to happen with them that they're always waiting for their relapse. And it's an interesting way to look at the world. It's when you're constantly in that experience of waiting for the shoe to drop, waiting for when they're going to, you know, go back and use or whatever it is. And it's the same with my cancer clients. You know, they're waiting. They're in that survivor mode. And that survivor mode, I call it the sobriety loop. And it eventually will catch up to you. And you have to step out of that. Like my cancer people and my alcoholics, I want them to step out of just sobriety or survival. I want them to move into thriving. I want them to actually step into their own power and their own lives and thrive, not constantly be living in fear for whatever it is to come back or haunt them. That once an addict, always an addict. I think that's a big time lie. It's a big time lie that people tell themselves, and it keeps them trapped in this sobriety loop and their pain. So how I do, I'm always looking for the trauma that is underlying the anxiety that is then needing to be medicated.
Absolutely.
And And there's so many ways to do it. And when I found that we can actually dialogue with that part and listen to the part and then again ask it what it needs to heal, as well as somatically finding how this ghost, I define trauma as a ghost. And so I say trauma is a ghost. It's a memory from your past that thinks it's still alive. And your job in gaining sobriety is teaching it to find its way back in history.
Absolutely.
And so, so when you can teach that part that's in that pain that is then needing to be medicated, when you can teach that part what it's like to find its way back in history, then suddenly the alcoholic no longer has to medicate themselves and they can move on to other things. Now, when I work with people, I don't want to be the only one that they're working with. Again, we create a team, and we're looking to create a team that's going to support them move through this trauma. the work I do is an essential part of that. But they also have a lot of stuff they have to clean up. They have psychological damage and spiritual damage and all of that type of stuff. So I'll work with people, and I'll want to get them in some kind of regular program where they're getting that support. So AA will have its place under those types of circumstances, but it's certainly not the end all. And I then ask them to get sort of some spiritual counseling and to do work like with what you do and to do definitely some body work and all of that type of stuff. And I found that that combination of therapy is extremely powerful, and it sets people where they're stepping out of the old behavior patterns and creating a new life for themselves. And it's a life that's not based on the old addiction habits. It's a life based on moving forward instead of falling back to the old tendencies and just managing those tendencies. One of the most sad things I think I've seen in AA meetings is when somebody stands up and says, hey, you know, my name's Joe and I'm an alcoholic and I can't tell you how hard it's been. I've been struggling for 20 years, but you know, I'm so happy that I'm sober. And that is just so depressing to me, because although I'm happy that they are sober, they've been spending 20 years managing that pain.
Right, exactly. And it's almost like they forgot about living, and it's just about being able to say that, which I've often felt that the new addiction is actually the groups rather than really making progress for the cause that create it, you know.
And I'm right there with you.
Yeah, my hat's off to you for that in developing. Now, how do you find your success rate is with people who have those addictive tendencies? Do they transform the underlying pain or cause and get much better results after working with you?
Huge, huge. I have a really, really wonderful success rate, whether it's obsessive compulsive behaviors or whether it's thought addictions, which is what obsessive compulsive behavior is, or whether it's drug addictions or alcohol addictions. You know, my people that work with me, we've had, I'm so blessed to have discovered this little process that I use. And, you know, I know there's other things out there that are similar. It's not that this is just my interpretation of all of these things. And it's such an incredible gift to be able to have a process, to be able to work with people, to be able to give the gift of the process and not hold it as if it's something that I'm responsible for, even something that I'm doing, because it's not. It's something I'm guiding people to do. I hold their hand, but they do the work.
Absolutely.
And it's a beautiful
blessing. Important. Yeah, because then clients sometimes become victims of the healer rather than empowered and proactive to take charge of their life on every level.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. And well, we're running out of time here, so it's been I could talk for hours. This is fantastic. So how do you like people to contact you or get your book? I'm going to have the live link for Barnes & Noble on this when I release it in the next half hour or so. But how do you like to be contacted, Peter, if people are interested in working with you or getting some more information?
Well, I'm all over the internet. You know, I have my own little online TV show that's createyourhealth.com. They can, where I feature people that do things like you, because I was so enamored with how I was able to heal using integrative and holistic practices that I wanted to share that. So I picked up a camera and I just started filming healers to share that information with people. So they can go to createyourhealth.com, CREATEYOUR. HEALTH.com. They can go to my personal website, which is Convergence Healing, which is also the name of the book, ConvergenceHealing.com, CONVERGENCEHEALING, ConvergenceHealing.com. And then they can find me under Convergence Healing on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, all those types of things. So people reach me very readily in all of those platforms.
That's wonderful. It's been fantastic to talk to you, and time has just flown by. We only have a couple seconds left. So my guest today on Conscious Connection is Peter Bedard, and his book out, which I'll have the live link so they can go right to buy the book, is Convergence Healing. And it's been fantastic to talk to you. You're such an enlightened being, and it's such an honor to interview you and hear your creative ways of transforming things that need to be transformed. So blessings to you, my friend. It's just an honor and pleasure, and I will blast this everywhere to get you wider exposure.
Thank you so much. And I just love the work you're doing. I just promoted your workshop with some people, and I totally appreciate the support. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So this is Gary Stewart of Conscious Connection signing off now with Peter Bedard. Until next time, namaste.